Ready, Mr. Miller?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's get going.
May it please the court. This case involves an allegation of actual notice under the Texas Tort Claims Act's notice provision, section 101.101. The first question that the parties briefed was whether notice specifically of a personal injury claim is required by the statute. Now, the statute, as far as formal notice is concerned, requires that the notice reasonably describe, and those are two words used in the statute, three different things, one of which is the damage or injury claimed. Now, there's an actual notice exception to formal notice in the statute, and the Texas Supreme Court, for reasons explained in detail in cases such as Cathy, Simons, and most recently, and perhaps in the longest manner, Wersdale.
Yes.
Yes. They have explained that the actual notice...
Well, it would seem like in Wersdale what they've been asked several times to reverse or to say that Cathy is wrong. And they don't want to ever say that they're wrong, but they're trying to seem to be backtracking or at least trying to distinguish. I don't know what they're trying to do in Wersdale.
I think Wersdale and Tenorio were, they entrenched themselves in Cathy. And I think the Wersdale discussion is probably the best discussion of the lot because it has the text and structure discussion, which is so important because those are the first two things you focus on. I mean, the text is important and the structure gives you guidance on how to apply the text. And so in Wersdale, the court says, look, if we construe actual notice to mean that you just have to have notice of some injury or property damage, well, then this actual notice exception is going to become the general rule when it's supposed to be the exception, and there's not going to be incentive to provide formal notice under the statute. So, you know, for that reason, going back to at least Cathy, the court has construed the actual notice exception to require the same knowledge that a governmental entity would receive if formal notice were given.
Right, because the whole point of trying to give notice, I mean, we have to take a step back, the reason for the statute, is to allow government entities to be able to do an investigation as to whatever allegations are made. And I think that's what was based in the Wersdale and the facts is that there's no doubt in that case that the city of Killeen knew that they were in trouble for
right.
This pile of mound that no one put barriers over because everybody was fighting as to whose responsibility the road was.
Yeah, they knew about the injuries right away, and they were wondering, okay, you know, is this our road or is it the county's road? And they did an investigation. Within a few days, they determined, oh, it's our road. This is our problem that this dirt barrier was put across the road and not marked. And so within, you know, a few days, they had knowledge of that described the type of injury. They had knowledge that described the date and time of incident. They had knowledge that described the incident, which the Texas Supreme Court has explained means that you have to have knowledge of facts that show that you're possibly at fault.
So why doesn't those, if that's what we need to have for you, the city to have actual notice as opposed to the formal notice, why doesn't this, in this case, this Goliad have actual notice of what occurred on this date? They have notice of the accident. They have notice of a property damage. I mean, I think that's the big dispute. Does it have to be notice of both the personal injury and the property damage? And they know that they're responsible because their driver pretty much admitted that he he rear-ended the plaintiff, well, and it was his fault.
If you try to impute knowledge of personal injury from the fact the property damage occurred, then you're not honoring the statutory requirement of reasonably describing the damage or injury claimed. And that's important. I mean, the purpose of the statute, I know purpose is secondary to text and structure, but Wersdale discusses the purpose, Simons too. They talk about incentive to investigate. Well, What incentive is there to investigate a personal injury claim? You know, the severity of the injury, the type, the parts of the body that are hurt, the treatment that the plaintiff is receiving, the reasonableness of the medical care. What incentive is there to investigate any of those facts if all you know about is that there was property damage and that the plaintiff told everybody at the scene, "I'm not hurt"? The incentive that notice is supposed to give is removed as to the personal injury claim. And I think, you know, there's also a little bit of history of the Tort Claims Act to consider as well. We mentioned in our briefing that originally the act only applied to personal injury and death claims. So in the 1970s, the property damage was added to the waiver of immunity in the Tort Claims Act. And the addition of the references to property damage in the notice statute are just a recognition that you can have property damage claims under the statute. It didn't change what was required for notice for personal injury claims, which was either the governmental entity know that you suffered a personal injury and that it may be at fault, or that you actually provided the formal notice that the statute requires.
So you're, as far as the word, the disjunctive and or, you're basically saying that you have to have everything, as opposed to the disjunctive of or, because it says personal and property, yeah. Or, how does that?
If you put and where that or is, this statute would make no sense whatsoever, because
Why? Because
you could have a property damage claim and no personal injury, but to rely on actual notice, you would have to prove death, injury, and property damage.
Well, only if they apply, though.
Right.
If you're not seeing,
but that's
that.
Why there's the or there instead of the and. There's no sense in trying to prove actual notice of personal injury if you're only claiming property damage. But if you put an and there, literally, you have to prove both.
If you're alleging both.
If you're right. If you're alleging both, yes. I mean, I'm sure that he's going to allege both property damage and personal injury here.
If you put and there, then what you would have would be.
Let's read it out loud.
Statute here. This is what you would have if you had and. The notice requirements, .. do not apply if the governmental unit has actual notice that death has occurred, that the claimant has received some injury, and that the claimant's property has been damaged. You'd have to show all three to satisfy the actual notice exception if you put and there. That's why and is irrational in that position. Or is the more reasonable term to use there. But also, you have to consider the construction of the statute in light of Cathy, Simons, Worsdale, and Tenorio, because those cases all say that the actual notice has to provide the same notice that formal notice would give, which brings you right back up to Section 101.101A and the requirement that you reasonably describe the injury or damage claimed.
What about implied notice? Why don't we go there since you're running out of time?
Yeah. Worsdale says you can't have it. It's very clear, emphatic. Constructive or imputed notice is repugnant to the term, to the express language of the statute. Problem with the Jenkins case that the plaintiff, appellee, cites is that Jenkins relies on this principle that, if you've got facts that you could learn by further investigation, that gets you there. That's sufficient for actual notice. But as the McGowan case from Houston explains, as the Cervantes case from San Antonio recognizes, that's not consistent with what the Texas Supreme Court has said. Actual notice is not notice that you could get upon further investigation. It's notice that you already have.
So why isn't the notices to the TML notice to Goliath? I mean, they're... If the whole point is to be on notice, he submitted records or a whole... I mean, there's no doubt that that TML knew this guy was injured, at least submitted medical records to the extent of whatever those are. We can argue for another day. Yeah. The question is, does that imply notice to Goliath?
No. There's no evidence in this record of the relationship between TML and Goliath. And that's a big problem. Agency requires a consensual relationship. The agent has to have an agreement that he's going to act on behalf of and subject to control of the principal. There's no evidence of any such relationship or agreement between TML and Goliad. And again, agency is not presumed. That's Texas Supreme Court case law. Burden of proof is on Bonnet. If there's no evidence in the record to support agency, they can't prevail on the agency argument.
What about estoppel?
Well, then we get into separation of powers issues because we've got a statute here that says that formal notice is the requirement, the general rule. We have this actual notice exception. Can you engraft a judicial exception, estoppel, where the legislature has already spoken? It's a big separation of powers issue because it's an immunity statute as well as a jurisdictional statute. And courts don't have the freedom to controvert the legislature by adding exceptions to statutes that govern immunity and jurisdiction. Those are matters that are within the legislature's province. On top of that, you have the problems with the proof of estoppel, which we discuss in our brief. There is no evidence even of a false representation, let alone a representation made to Bonnet, because the card was handed to the officer, not to Bonnet. What on the card was false? We don't know from this record. All we know is that for whatever reason, TML isn't providing a defense to the county. We don't know whether TML was obligated to provide a defense in the county. That's not in the record. It's just a whole bunch of speculation. There's assumptions really here. The assumption that the financial responsibility statute applies is one of the key points in the appellee's brief, and yet, by its own terms, that statute doesn't apply to government vehicles and government entities. The idea that TML is an insurer is wrong because it's not an insurer. It is a self-insurance intergovernmental risk pool. So, there's a whole lot of false assumptions on which the argument relies. But with respect to estoppel, it would be extraordinary to say that estoppel is a way to get around the Tort Claims Act's notice requirement because there's no case saying that. The cases that the plaintiff appellee cites don't involve the Tort Claims Act. Those cases involve proprietary functions of municipalities, which don't even involve governmental immunity. So, and those cases are from before the 1986 amendments to the Act.
Before you run out of time, Ms. Miller, I want to go. I was rereading the, looking at my Woodsert, Kylene. I don't know how you say this, Wardsdale, Kylene case. One of the things that it talks about in this case is that when an actual notice evidence is disputed in a case brought under the Texas Court, a fact question arises. So if we are dealing here with a fact question, isn't a denial of the plea of jurisdiction correct to allow whether the Goliad actual notice goes to the jury or not?
Well, the question is, what is the dispute of material fact here? Okay, because the parties disagree on whether there's actual notice. But when you're disputing about the interpretation or application of the law to the facts, that's different from disagreeing about what the facts are. I mean, the facts are Bonnet told people at the scene he wasn't injured. The facts are that's what the officer put in the accident report. The facts are that Bonnet didn't communicate with the county. The facts are that he communicated with TML. The facts are there's no evidence in the record of the relationship between TML and the county, if there is a relationship. There's not even evidence that TML was aware of the county's involvement in this.
Was Golden Crescent in any way, shape, or form any type of governmental entity?
It is a governmental entity because those regional development commissions are statutorily defined as governmental entities. And those are generally made out of municipalities, which is the reason for TML's involvement. Just getting back to the Jenkins case cited by the appellants, I think I mentioned that, and if I did already, I'm sorry to go over it again. But the idea that property damage puts you on inquiry notice of possible personal injury, again, that's contradictory to what the Supreme Court has been saying. The Cervantes and Rocha cases out of San Antonio have it right. You don't presume a personal injury out of property damage. There's even references to $1,000 in damaged box being checked off on the accident report. But for the purposes of this case, that doesn't really mean anything because There's no evidence in the record or no reason to believe there's a correlation between $1,000 in property damage and whether somebody had a personal injury. And on top of that, to imply such a correlation would be contrary to the facts known to the county, which was that Bonnet disclaimed any personal injury at the scene of the accident.
You'll have your 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Cole?
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. So before I get to the legal issues in this case, which I think clearly favor Mr. Bonnet's position, I want to discuss what happened here first, just very briefly. There is no dispute in this case that Mr. Berger slammed into the back of Mr. Bonnet's car and caused property damage that the county knew about. The county also knew that Mr. Berger had done this two times before, this exact same thing, in recent months. The county admits that it knew about property damage. The county admits that it had a policy of giving out a financial responsibility card that said the owner of the vehicle is Golden Crescent Regional Planning Commission and the insurer, or the risk pool, is TML. There's no dispute that immediately after the accident, as soon as he started having signs of physical pain, that Mr. Bonnet sent all of his medical bills to TML, which was the entity that Goliad told Mr. Berger to tell people to contact.
But there's also no... You're not going to do this.
Go ahead.
There's also no evidence that, unfortunately, Mr. Bonnet never advised... Once he started feeling injured, that he advised anyone other than TML that he was injured, at least as it pertains to Goliad.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm going to get to that on our legal argument.
Okay.
But I just want to make clear in this case that Goliad County's behavior has been unconscionable. They're instructing their employees to hand out a card that says that TML is the person that you contact if you have injuries, and that's exactly what Mr. Bonnet did.
Was Golden now, Crescent ever given notice?
Was Golden Crescent ever given notice? I believe that there was some communication with Golden Crescent through TML. TML was working with Golden Crescent, and he was going back and forth and working with them through that. But, Golden Crescent filed a separate motion for summary judgment saying, well, the driver wasn't our employee, and so we don't get immunity. So I just want to go in and address their thing. So Kathy, now Warsdale, Tenorio, just repeat the same thing that Kathy said. And what Kathy said back in 1995 was that the governmental unit has to have actual notice of their subjective fault in an injury or property damage. And that's exactly what happened in this case. There's no dispute that Goliad County knew about his subjective fault. They fired the driver on the spot because this had happened two times before in recent months.
I think that the question, though, and I'm glad you brought up subject awareness because I forgot to ask Mr. Miller about that. The question becomes for us is subject awareness has to be applied both to, as Mr. Miller has argued, subject awareness, a fault in the accident,
right.
Subject awareness of and of not only the property damage as they were, I think the first two prongs are satisfied, but do they also have subject awareness of Mr. Bonnet's injury? Is that also required? Do we have to hit all three prongs in order to overcome the immunity statute?
Well, I would argue no, and we're going to, but it doesn't matter ultimately, as I'll say in my second argument.
Okay.
But I would argue no because Jenkins, which was decided in 2010, 15 years after Cathay, and Tenorio, Warsdale are just repeating exactly what Kathy said. It really is dicta that the defendant is relying on in Warsdale because the issue there was whether the governmental unit had subjective awareness of its fault. And in this case, they clearly had subjective awareness of their fault in causing property damage. Now, in Jenkins, the court held that, they did provide formal notice, but it said even if the plaintiff did not provide formal notice, the fact that they knew about their subjective fault in causing property damage was enough under the plain language of the Cathy case. And that's the same, the plain language of the Cathy case is the plain language of the Tenorio case and the plain language of the Worsdale case. So you have Schneider, Jenkins, and Garza, which are repeating this. And yes, admittedly, in all three of those cases, it's an alternative holding. But I think that this fits, this alternative holding fits nicely with the purpose of the statute, which is not to allow the county to conduct triage, but rather to allow the county to know when it needs to investigate. Obviously, if you don't have subjective awareness of fault, you're not going to think that you have to investigate because you didn't do anything. But here, they knew that their driver had done this exact same thing to people, and there is no dispute that he rammed into the back of our client. But I want to get to our second argument because there's something that they said that I especially want to address. They said there's no evidence that TML had any relationship with Garza. And to me, that seems like a crazy thing to say. It's a fact question. The jury gets to determine whether they had a relationship with TML. And they gave a financial responsibility card listing TML as the insurer that Mr. Bonnet should contact. And so if
I give out my insurance card, that doesn't mean that Farmers, who's my insurance for my car, has an authority to act on my behalf, which is what you're trying to argue to this court, that TML is somehow an agent of Goliad and as such is acting on their behalf. Just because I hand them my insurance card doesn't develop the relationship of authority of them to act on behalf of Goliad, which is ultimately who has to be given the notice.
Well, in Schneider, there is an intergovernmental risk pool that the plaintiff had given notice to, and the court there said that, well, that was the intergovernmental risk pool was a agent of the authority with the responsibility to investigate. And we think that the same thing implies. The question is whether there's, as they said nicely in their own reply brief, I believe their heading is, the absence of a consensual relationship between TML and the county negates any claimed agency. Well, I think that obviously there is a consensual relationship. If you hit me with your car and I give you a card that says, or if I hit you with my car, and then I give you a card that says, well, if you have any problems with this or if you're hurt, why don't you contact Bob? And then Bob contacts you and says, well, yeah, I heard you were hurt in that car accident with Sam. Here, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to help you out. I'm going to take care of everything. Then there's absolutely a consensual relationship between me and Bob, because it was my policy to hand out that card that says contact Bob if you're injured. On the last argument, where we're talking about whether or not there could be an estoppel claim, I just want to first consider the consequences of what the county is saying. The county is saying that estoppel can never apply to 101.101, no matter how dishonest the county is. So in this case, they gave a financial responsibility card that said that Mr. Bonnet should contact TML. But under the county's reasoning, they could give out a car. They could paint on the side of their cars, We're Victoria County, and then give out a card that says contact Victoria County, and then you contact Victoria County or a fictional company. Contact this fictional company, and then you contact the fictional company, and they say, okay, well, we're investigating your claim, and we're going to pay your claim. String them along for 6 months, and then the county says, well, we didn't have knowledge of it because you never told us in particular. You just told that company that we told you to contact. You never told us in particular. So the consequences of what they're saying are absurd. And they say, well, it's a separation of powers issue because the legislature gets to decide when sovereign immunity is waived. But that cannot possibly be what the legislature intended.
Was there any case law out there that talks in terms of estoppel and notice?
So in several cases, which we cite in our briefs, there is dicta that implies that Roberts would apply to a 101.101 claim. So the situation is something, it's in a lot of the cases, the situation is something where they consider whether Roberts apply, but they say, no, it's not exactly what happened in Roberts. And in fact, I think the Supreme Court has recently summarized Roberts is saying that when the government claims immunity, but they take some action to lead the plaintiff into believing that they don't have to provide notice to the government, then that means that's when Roberts applies. And that was in a situation discussing 101.101. Now, they ultimately decided that Roberts didn't apply factually, but they still had those cases where courts act as if Roberts can apply to 101.101 claims. And so I just wanted to address a few of the things that they say. They say that Bonnet's conclusory statement that he had no way to know is belied by his learning that fact within a week after filing suit. Now, they're just inferring things that aren't based on stuff that's not in the record, but by the same token, I can tell you that the reason Mr. Bonnet was able to figure that out right after filing suit is that counsel for Golden Crescent Regional Planning Commission told him that Goliad was the driver. There was nothing in any reasonable investigation that would show that that bus was being driven by Goliad County. It was an accident that took place in Victoria County in a Golden Crescent Regional Planning Commission, which is Victoria Transit, bus. And so he was hit by a Goliad bus in Victoria County, and then Goliad said, well, the person who owns the vehicle is Victoria Transit, and you should contact TML if you want. And that's exactly what Mr. Bonnet did. There's just no way that any reasonable person would know that they were going to have to give notice to anyone other than TML or the Golden Crescent Regional Planning Commission. And so the argument that they're making, there's no limiting principle. It's that the county is not subject. It can lie to the plaintiff. It can do whatever it wants. But as long as it digs its head in the sand and doesn't get actual notice delivered directly to us, even if it designates someone as its agent, which is what happened in this case, to deliver notice to, they're out of luck. You didn't give notice directly to the county, and they weren't being entirely forthright about that party being their agent. So they say that evidence of certain elements was lacking. Well, the first thing that I'd like to say about that is that the Roberts case doesn't go through the express elements of estoppel. It just says that in that case, I believe that there was a slip and fall accident, and the city said something like, well, that was you need to contact our contractors. And so it was a city notice requirement, and the plaintiff went and spoke with the contractors for 6 weeks and tried to get it worked out with them, and the contractors delayed, and finally, after the notice requirement had passed, the contractor said, oh yeah, well, actually, the city would be responsible for that, and you were supposed to give notice to the city, and now it's too late. Well, that's exactly analogous to what happened in this situation, just comparing the facts of Roberts to this situation. The county said, oh yeah, the bus was owned by Golden Crescent Regional Planning Commission, and their governmental risk pool is TML. You should contact TML. That's exactly what he did. TML, for at least 6 months, was telling him, we're going to take care of you. We're going to provide for your injuries. And they strung him along, and now when he finally discovers, because opposing counsel for Golden Crescent Regional Planning Commission told his attorney that Goliad is actually the party that you needed to give notice to here. Nobody in Mr. Bonnet's shoes would know what they're claiming he had to do. So they say that Bonnet still has not explained how Mr. Berger made a representation to him by handing the van's financial responsibility card to the investigating officer. Well, ordinarily, if they knew that the purpose of a financial responsibility card is to say who's financially responsible for any injury or damage claims. So when they gave it to the investigating officer, the purpose of that was for the information to get back to Mr. Bonnet. So even if they gave it to him, that was the purpose of that. And they said, nor has Mr. Bonnet explained how anything on the card itself was false, but the language is a misleading or a concealment. And even if nothing was quite literally false, oh, well, the bus actually was owned by Golden Crescent Regional Planning Commission, and the TML actually was their insurer, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It's, even if nothing was literally false, it was extremely misleading to give that card to the investigating officer, and I don't know how Mr. Bonnet would be able to tell what he was supposed to do. And they also said he's failed to explain how showing the card to the officer was intended to induce Bonnet to refrain from providing notice of his claim to Goliad County. And I just think that that's really obvious. When you give a financial responsibility card, your intent is to say, this is the financially responsible party, contact them and they'll take care of you. Now, they point out that the statutes that require people to give financial responsibility cards are that the governmental units are not burdened by that. But I really view that as a side issue, because Goliad did provide a financial responsibility card that listed Golden Crescent Regional Planning Commission and listed TML. So whether they were required to or not, it's pretty clear that the point of providing a financial responsibility card is to say who's financially responsible for injury and property damage. Now, just one last point on our on this issue. this is a little bit repetitive, but they say somehow Bonnet deduces that under the county's reasoning, a governmental unit could always avoid notice under 101.101. And they say Bonnet overlooks the simple answer to his problem. He could have avoided any notice issue by investigating his claim and providing timely formal notice. But how on earth was Mr. Bonnet supposed to know who he was supposed to contact when Goliad County told him to contact the person that they're now claiming, when it's helpful to them, is the wrong person? Now, I'll go back to the first point right away. And again, just to reemphasize that Jenkins and Schneider and Garza, all of those held that subjective awareness of fault and causing property damage was sufficient. And all of them were after the Cathy case. And that's how courts have interpreted Cathy. It's a reasonable interpretation. It's certainly a reasonable interpretation of the statute. And so, in conclusion, Mr. Bonnet, we were right when we said in our opening brief that Mr. Bonnet did everything right. He's a 90-year-old man, got rear-ended by an employee of Goliad, but nobody ever told him that it was an employee of Goliad. The Goliad's employer, Mary Wade, knew that Mr. Berger's negligence had caused property damage to Mr. Bonnet, and Mr. Bonnet immediately contacted the people who were listed on the financial responsibility card as the people that he should contact. And for that reason, this court should hold that the district court did not abuse its discretion, and that at the very least, there is a fact issue that should go to the jury.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further?
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Thank you for giving us back 2 minutes.
May it please the court. Okay. This case, like Maricuti that this court decided about 9 years ago, is good examples of why notice to insurers and indemnity providers and risk pools isn't sufficient. If the legislature wanted notice to insurers to be sufficient, they could have put that in the statute. They have other provisions of the Tort Claims Act that deal with insurance, but not this provision.
I think we're going, but I'm still caught up of how we read the statute in light of the language in the City of Killeen case. Specifically, the court reasoned that the government defendant's subject awareness of its role in producing or contributing to the accident was not equivalent to its subjective awareness of some fault on its part as required by Simmons case. And so there's a whole discussion in the case about subject awareness regarding fault. And so what seems to be a question here today is whether we're going to take that subject awareness and make it actually also a subject awareness of the personal injury. We know we have, of that. So where does it in any of the cases that I read, it never says that we have to make, not that it's saying that it won't happen, but where does it say that they have that it is required to have subject awareness of the injuries? I mean, that's a whole issue.
I think part of it is that this issue doesn't come up that often because ordinarily people give the formal notice under the statute. But Worsdale does say this, quote, "The statutory language, construed together rather than in isolation, requires not only knowledge of some harm, but also information sufficient to, one, identify the particular loss ultimately alleged, and two, to alert the government unit to something impending for any number of reasons, but especially to allow preparations to be made." So, you know, that language is helpful. I mean, you consider that with the statute, reasonably describe the damage or injury claimed. You consider the purpose. It all points to...
Well, the purpose, I think, hurts in the sense that the purpose is that you get to investigate. Are you going to investigate any different as opposed to whether it's a personal injury or a property damage?
Maybe. Absolutely.
Maybe.
because you have different damages to investigate when there's a personal injury claim.
Well, okay? I think the county takes it more seriously as it does in the city of Killeen, that it's a death as opposed to a non-death case. I agree with that. I think police officers investigate differently. But is that the manner going to be investigated differently goes back to the actual notice requirement? I mean, you know what I mean? Should that affect the notice? Second of all, how do people know? How does Mr. Bonnet supposed to know that he's supposed to give Goliad notice within 6 months?
You ask the questions. You ask the driver who he works for. You ask Golden Crescent, is this your employee or an employee of a contractor? Because transit agencies are routinely operated by contractors. The Fort Worth versus Transportation Authority versus Rodriguez case decided by the Supreme Court last year involved extension of governmental immunity to the contractor. Right. The Metro case versus Hinojosa out of Houston decided last year. Metro got off because the bus driver of Metro Bus was a contractor's employee. In this day and age, you have to ask that question. Are you a direct hire or are you a contractor's employee? Who's really operating this route? And that's just one more reason why you just can't assume. Now, I've got 1 minute left. I want to make a couple quick points. There's a lot of stuff about what the card said, what the county told, what the TML told. The problem is that we're limited to what's in the record. So there was a lot of characterizations of the record that are not supported by the record in what Bonnet said. Regarding telling Bonnet to contact TML, nobody with the county told Bonnet to contact TML. That is an inference from the financial responsibility card. They assume in their brief that financial responsibility follows the ownership of the vehicle. There's evidence that Mary Way testified that I don't know why we provide that card instead of a TAC card. It's just what we have done. There's no evidence of the deliberate kind of misleading you need to impose estoppel against a governmental unit. Benefits of the doubt go to the government, something that was drilled home by the Supreme Court earlier this year in Hillman. So if you're construing a statute that involves immunity, if you have any doubts, immunity is preserved.
Thank you. Case will be under submission.